Now, yesterday, not a great day. It was a milestone that we certainly didn't want to reach. However, we were there. More than 50,000 deaths linked to COVID-19. That's according to the government's official figures. But this has also been a week that we started to win the battle against COVID-19, possibly. In less than 12 months, it's infected more than 50 million people across the planet. It's killed in excess of 1.25 million people. But now, it seems this vaccine, this has been the big conversation point this week for many, many people. This vaccine to protect us against the virus may just be around the corner and could be available to some before Christmas. What a Christmas present that would be. Is the vaccine, well, the vaccine is actually from the drug company Pfizer. Is it a game changer that we've been hoping for? Angela Abbasi is the senior clinical lecturer at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, joins us now. Angela, morning to you once again.
Morning.
When this news came through early this week about this vaccine, what was your reaction to that?
Like everybody else, I was just delighted. And I watched Jonathan Van Tam, you were speaking about him earlier, and the other two specialists on the briefing. And it's not just one vaccine. There, you know, we have a suite of these that are in various stages of preparation. And there's a possibility that by this time next year, we'll be in the happy position of having a range of options that we can tailor to different different target groups, different demographic groups, so that they get the best fit vaccine for them.
Game changer. Is it a game changer, Angela?
Well, potentially, yeah. I mean, a vaccine is potentially that, yeah, potentially a game changer, certainly.
We saw Jonathan Van Tam yesterday saying, listen, if I could be front of the queue, obviously because of my age, you know, I can't, but I have actually said to my mum, you know, when it's ready, you get yourself there. I think she's 78, coming up to 79. And, you know, he has said, as soon as this box is ticked to say it's OK, you get yourself in the queue. That was powerful yesterday.
I thought that was incredibly powerful. As you know, I watched these briefings very closely, and that was the best. That was just the most uplifting one that we've had so far. It was amazing, and he's very relatable, isn't he? He's a very down to earth scientist, and the way that he described the modifications that we've made to assessing the quality of vaccines, just to make sure that we can get them out as quickly as possible, I found very compelling. And I thought that June Rain from the MHRA, that's the body that really ensures that everything is going to be safe. Managed, you know, she talked about the balance of benefits and risk. I was very confident that she's not a woman who's going to be bullied into getting, you know, cutting corners. You know, when that vaccine comes out, I came away feeling really sure that it was going to be safe and it was going to be coming out as quickly as it could happen.
To get where we are now, Angela, so let's forget the last couple of weeks in March. Let's say April, May, June, July, August, September, October, and a bit of November. From then to today, to have this vaccine and others coming down the line. I never use the word awesome, but in this case, I will. That is awesome. To be able to, that time span, it is absolutely awesome.
It is phenomenal. Awesome. I mean, you've robbed my word. People who know me will tell you that I use that word a lot. So, you know, I'm going to let you use it today.
Thank you.
But I'm going to go with phenomenal, you know, amazing. It's a once in a life. I mean, it's just extraordinary. You know that my primary area of, one of my main areas of research is HIV. HIV has been with us for three decades and we don't have a vaccine. And look what's been, what has the world has managed to do in 12 months on COVID-19. It is incredible.
We all crave this normality, going to the match, doing simple things, going off shopping, going to a concert, watching a band, you know, hugging our loved ones as well. Will we get back to normal as we knew it? There may be a lot of people who will never want to go back to that kind of crowd, if you like. And there will be people who will just have a mask in the bag anyway, have a mask in the car anyway, and hand gels now forever. Do you feel that?
Yeah. I think that there will be people like that. I think, you know, and if you look around the world, you know, and sometimes it's because of air pollution, but also it's because of concerns about infection. There are communities, there are countries where people just wear masks. That's what they do. You know, large segments of the population wear masks. And the way we move about the world after COVID will have to change. But I think there are a number of really important developments that have taken, that have been accelerated this year, that although it's painful in terms of thinking of what this year has cost us, you know, there have been real gains in terms of science. If I look at how they've modified that pipeline to get these vaccines out so quickly, that's an incredible feat of logistical organization that has gone from the WHO right down to individual countries. I think we've got alliances between countries. Jonathan was talking this morning on the briefing about how he'd been on the phone to his colleagues, his counterparts in Europe. You know, that kind of global consultation, that kind of global cooperation around the world pulling together around a single problem, that sets up structures, relationships, communication pathways that will stand us in good stead for the rest of time, really. It's incredible. It's really incredible.
I'm going to talk about students in a moment, but just before we get there, the mass testing in Liverpool, less than a week into this, many, many thousands of people have been tested now. It's going to be rolled out to different places in the Liverpool City region, though slightly different. This is a great testament to the people of this city, and yet another first when we come to the historical timeline of what this city's been involved in through the centuries.
I say it to anybody who will stand still long enough to listen. Liverpool punches above its weight. It really does. You know, Tom was on your show a couple of weeks ago talking about the amazing contribution that the people of Liverpool had made.
This is Tom Solomon, isn't it?
No, not Tom Solomon, Tom Wingfield.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Tom Wingfield.
About the amazing contribution that the people of Liverpool had made to the vaccine studies that we are, that, you know, that we're running from, Daniela is running from her group, her amazing vaccine group at the School of Tropical Medicine. You know, we were ahead on a number of indicators in terms of recruitment. And here we are again, you know, blazing the trail for the country in COVID testing. You know, Liverpool is just a wonderful city full of wonderful people. So proud to live here.
And so many people from all over the country, students, come to Liverpool. A lot of them stay and they put roots down. However, that might be further down the line, because once we come out of lockdown, what do you make of the government's plans for getting students home for Christmas? Is it safe, or is there a danger it will cause a spike in infections? And I think the reality of it will be that there will be many parents who will say to their kids, listen, just come home. We want you home for Christmas, whether you've had a test or not.
So, all along, you and I have had this discussion about decisions made with the balance of risk and benefit. And I think my reading of the guidelines, they've done their best. You know, at the end of the day, you know, the timing of the travel window is time to, if you need to isolate, then you do get your isolation done and dusted by Christmas, because human beings want to be together at Christmas. And so people are going to be together at Christmas. So let's make sure they do that as safely as possible. And I think, you know, looking at the timelines, the timing of the windows and the need for isolation and the arrangements for travel and the guidance that's been given, I think it's a good plan. And if people stick to it, if people follow the guidance, then, you know, I think the balance of risk and benefit will have been achieved.
Is this something that's going to be with us forever now, do you think? But we manage it like we do with the flu.
Well, we've got a vaccine, I think it's still too early to say. I mean, as you said, you know, a couple of minutes ago, we've only had this disease for a year.
Yeah.
What we've managed to achieve in that year has been incredible. But there's still stuff that we don't know because we've only had it for a year. So, I think we are really changing the rule book in terms of how quickly we can learn what we need to know. But we still don't yet know all the things that we need to know.
All right.
I think that data is coming in much quicker than it's ever come in about any disease.
Sure. And until we put this mass vaccination program in place, not just for us in the city, but globally, that's when we learn from it again, whether we need another one in 6 months or 6 years, a bit of a booster. So we don't know until everybody's had it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly right. There's just a lot of things that we don't know. There's a difference between modelling, which is what a lot of the plans are based on, which are kind of best guesstimates. And then in 2 years' time, we'll be able to replace the best guesstimates from models with actual real data. Sure. And you know how I feel about actual real data.
Oh, I know. I know how you feel about that. Listen, we're almost out of time, but I think the last time we had a chat, you gave us a couple of really inspirational lines before you left us. Have you got another one?
Yeah, so I don't have an actual poem today. Okay. I've got a quote from a formidable poet, a woman called Maya Angelou, who all your readers, I'm sure, will know, this formidable African-American poet. And she just talks about poetry, and that really struck, it chimed with me with the recent news. And she says, "Poetry can tell us what human beings are. It can tell us why we stumble and fall and how, miraculously, we can stand up." And I feel that this year, with 1.2 million deaths, 50 million deaths in the UK alone, has been a year of difficulty and trouble. And to be ending this year with the most powerful lesson about how, as a species, as a group, globally, we can come together and stand up and create a vaccine that's going to change the game. That really is a wonderful way to end.
Right. Angela, good to talk to you. Give our best to your colleagues. And thanks once again for giving us your time this morning. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Angela Obasi, who's the senior clinical lecturer at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. She could tell me a story anytime.
Oh, seriously.
What a voice.
What a voice. I'd gone off into a little dream world there. It was lovely.
Wonderful. There you go. I think there might be a little sideline there. Those
Children's BBC are calling.
Children's BBC.
Bedtime stories.
Bedtime. That was it. Bedtime stories with Angela Obasi. It's got a ring.